WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. The tit for tariff is underway between the U.S. and China. A day after President Trump imposed 10% taxes on Chinese-made goods, Beijing is upping the ante by announcing 10 to 15% tariffs on American products. Correspondent Cammie McCormick.
China may be hoping for a pause in tariffs, which Canada and Mexico received, but in the meantime, it's prepared several measures, including tariffs on coal, crude oil, agriculture machinery, and large engine vehicles imported from the U.S. The tariffs would take effect next Monday. Trump does plan to speak with Chinese President Xi in the next few days.
Even though tariffs are on hold in Canada, many have been left with a bitter taste in their mouths. CBS's Chris Mavridis.
Here in Toronto, there seems to be a growing sentiment among shoppers who say not only have the president's threats spooked them, it's made them feel betrayed, and now they intend to boycott American-made goods. Supermarkets are listening. The produce manager for one large grocery chain says they're switching to oranges from Mexico.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio is in El Salvador, where he says President Nayib Bukele is willing to open his prison gates to U.S. deportees and Americans.
He has offered to house in his jails dangerous American criminals in custody in our country, including those of U.S. citizenship and legal residence.
Kelly says he would charge the U.S. what he calls a relatively low fee. Salvage crews hope to raise the cockpit of the American Airlines jet that collided with an Army helicopter from the Potomac River near Washington, D.C. today. CBS's Chris Van Cleef says investigators are still in the process of pinning down the cause.
Ultimately, when the causes of this crash come together, it will be plural. There will be a chain of events that led to disaster.
The plane's fuselage, one of the engines, and a wing were lifted from the water yesterday. A new look at kids and screens. CBS's Michael George.
A study in JAMA looked at smartphone use among teens ages 13 to 18 and found while overall they're spending an average of 6 hours a day on their phones, a quarter of that use happens at school. This comes as some states look to ban phone use in schools altogether.
The Super Bowl's coming up Sunday, and Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce says he's trying not to be fazed by the bright lights and cameras.
You know, you got here for a reason. Your team got here for a reason. So lean on them and don't let the moment be too big for you.
Eagles defensive tackle Jordan Davis, laser focused too.
You always want to win them all, and we're going in there with that same intention. We just got to keep doing our job with the same thing that we've been doing.
S&P futures down 7. This is CBS News.
Nothing makes a gathering great like Eggland's Best eggs. They're just so delicious, with better nutrition too. For us, it's eggs any style, as long as they're the best. Eggland's Best.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
The Bucks get zapped by the Thunder. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks lost on the road to the Oklahoma City Thunder, 125-96. Milwaukee missing four of their top players, Giannis, Damian Lillard, Brooke Lopez, Chris Middleton. It was the Bucks' fourth straight loss. Pat Connington.
They're a tremendous team, and that's not a secret. For us, when you're in a game, when you're in a situation like where you're shorthanded and kind of, you know, like we were tonight, you got to think about the things that you can control.
College hoops, the Badgers host the Hoosiers from Indiana tonight in Madison. Greg Gard talked about their win over Northwestern over the weekend.
I didn't think we came really ready to compete right out of the gate on Saturday. So we got that fire lit a little bit. But I thought the group of Janicki, McGee, Amos was out there at time. Obviously, Gilmore did some good things in the first half. We got some energy going and got our juices going a little bit with that group off the bench. And that sometimes we need that.
That's Wisconsin's head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Jimmy Carter may officially never have held the title of artist, unless you count making The Way You Live Your Life absolute artistry. The former president, who passed away in December, was honored with his fourth Grammy for his audiobook, The Last Sunday in Plains, a centennial celebration. Fourth Grammy, and he wasn't even in the biz. I need to start doing more. Ye, formerly known as Kanye, and his wife, Bianca Censori, who might be AI personified, were unaware there was a dress code at the Grammys. Ye and his best girl were trying to sneak in under the radar and not attract any attention, and didn't until Bianca dropped her coat, revealing she was wearing nothing, or a sheer mini dress that hid nothing. Apparently, all her pantsuits were in the wash. A quick Google search will reveal that she shouldn't have even bothered wearing said sheer mini dress, which is the same thing I wore for the Grammys, but I was watching from my own home. She's a cute girl. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of clouds in the overnight with lows near zero, wind chills between 10 and 15 below, thanks to a northwest wind. Plenty of clouds sticking around on Tuesday with highs in the lower teens. Clouds Tuesday night, then snow Wednesday. It's zero at our studios.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Civic Media and WGBW rock star Nikki Zirjev and treasure hunter Bill Blackwell. With a name like Blackwell, you have to be a treasure hunter. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is 93.5 The Tap.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wasota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitloh.
With a show that is unabashedly Wisconsin and brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio for this Tuesday, February 4th. Brittany Merlot is along in just a sec with the forecast here. Then we'll visit with Hans and Sheila Everhart from the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association about more about the impact of ag tourism in Wisconsin and some events to consider attending as well. So it's just nice to have Ms. Merlot back. Greg is back from his vacation, as Tony puts on YouTube. It's the whole gang.
Yeah, it is, baby.
There we are. So, Brittany, good morning. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Cold.
Peachy.
Cold. It's, I'm not, again, not recommending the below zero stuff. We got below single digits up here, but still. I mean,
sure
look at me at the bright side. Hey, it's not 20 below.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, yeah. Hey, well, there's no cold weather advisory, so it can't be that cold, right?
It can still be
sure
cold.
Feels, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Right now, wind chills into Superior, Wisconsin are 25 below zero. That is what it feels like. Actually, a good chunk of the state, the northern half, is it feeling at least 10 below right now. Down south, you're feeling those single digits. Even though it's 25 degrees into Kenosha at the moment, it really feels much cooler than that. So those winds are going to stay persistent through this morning. They'll start to ease up a little bit this afternoon and evening. So we still have to battle that wind chill today. Highs will only climb to the single digits, probably 5 degrees or so into far northwest Wisconsin, and then 20 degrees we're looking at into the southern parts of the state. So right where you're hanging out now, Kenosha, you're going to be dropping from there. And of course, as we go into tomorrow, we are looking at more snow headed our way by the evening hours. So a cloudy day today, breezy and cold. Then tomorrow we warm up a little bit more into the mid-20s to low 30s and then get hit with some snowfall. It'll move in by the evening, overnight, and gone by Thursday morning. And it does look like a good 3 to 5 inches into portions of the Northwoods, especially Hayward area. And 1 to 3 inches for the rest of the state, except for if you're way down south, probably less than an inch.
I was so happy with the snow yesterday. It cut off at about 10 a.m. and it had just crossed the threshold where for a while I was like, I'm going to have to shovel this. And it was just enough again where it's like, nope, you need the snowblower for it. And it wasn't too much that it was just like, you know, the knife through butter kind of right. thing. When you can just zip up and down and get your driveway done, it's a beautiful thing.
It is. That's very satisfying, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. Brittany, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you.
You can sign up for our Up North News daily newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. We have a regular weekday edition And we have a new edition that comes out on Sunday mornings that I put together with more of a political emphasis. Christina's newsletter on the weekdays has a lot of Wisconsin features and stories about what makes our state a great place to live. I'm doing a weekend one with the team here, at least through the state budget process, so we can look at what your legislature is doing and also what Congress is doing with the new administration. So you can sign up over at upnorthnewswi.com. And I want to thank all the folks who wrote in. We put a question of the week in the newsletter, and I asked what were your thoughts on reinstating the 48-hour waiting period before you can purchase a handgun in Wisconsin to try to offset the number of crimes of passion and suicides that result. The responses were overwhelmingly in favor of restoring the 48-hour waiting period, which makes sense because it has overwhelming public support as well. It's not a party Democrat Republican thing. A lot of people think a 48-hour waiting period might help really reduce some of the tragic things that happen with guns shortly after they are purchased. So we appreciate your responses on that, and we'll have a new question of the week coming up this weekend. And as always, you can always respond to things we're doing in the Facebook and YouTube comment sections too. All right, we have a special guest at 7:30. We're going to have Wisconsin Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underle. She is running for a second four-year term, so we'll talk to her at 7:30 today. Then tomorrow at this time period, we'll be talking to State Superintendent candidate Jeff Wright. And then we are still efforting, trying to get Brittany Kinzer to agree to come on as well. Those are the three candidates that square off 2 weeks from today. And in-person early absentee voting starts today at your local clerk's office for the February 18th primary. Go to myvote.wi.gov for more ballot voting and registration information. All right, let's bring in Hans Breitenmoser. He's a dairy farmer up in Lincoln County. Sheila Everhart from the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association, and talk a bit about just the many ways that ag tourism continues to grow and make an impact here. Hans and Sheila, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Great to have you here, Sheila. Thanks for coming back. Hans, how are things up in your neck of the woods?
Fine, fine. Other than that story you had earlier with Dan, that Merrill man, that was me. I was protesting the tariffs. It went south pretty fast. But it worked because they're not going to be on for another 30 days. So
see, it was you. It was you that stopped the tariffs.
You're welcome, America.
Yeah, if pulling a Lady Godiva is what it takes, Hans is there for you. So,
you better believe it.
Hans, the thing is just, it's silly because what Canada, you know, supposedly agreed to and what Mexico supposedly agreed to, these are things they would have done anyway with any new president. They would have had a nice civil conversation without the insults, without getting everybody all riled up. They're going to continue to negotiate. It just seems so unnecessary to put every farmer, every member of the global economy on the edge of their seat.
I would agree, and it does have real impacts. I mean, I was on the phone yesterday regarding the canola contracts that I have. I was on the phone on Friday regarding milk margin insurance. So what gets said in Washington really, really does matter to real people on the ground, and have a lot of people scrambling who don't really need to scramble if ultimately the end result is going to be pretty much, you know, we're going to have trade partners. And so, yeah, we could do without the drama. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Again, we're basically keeping the status quo. The status quo is not a victory for Donald Trump, that we avoided, you know, the trade war that he would have ignited. You know, that's more the news than anything else, because look, Wisconsin's agriculture industry is a powerhouse, and ag tourism is a natural part of it. So that brings us to Sheila Everhart to talk a bit more about that. And Sheila, I know that, for example, there is a state budget request in for the Office of Agriculture, Tourism, and Rural Innovation. And so, I mean, it doesn't matter what the group is. You're looking at things like, in your case, a state budget. And all you want is some stability so that you can ask for the things that you want to ask for.
Absolutely. What we're looking for is to make Wisconsin a powerhouse in the agricultural tourism market. and to bring tourism revenue to our state of Wisconsin. Agricultural tourism is growing globally and across the United States, and it's in 2024, it contributed $24.87 billion to our economy, and it's projected to grow by almost 12% through 2032. And, you know, what are the driving forces behind this? It's absolutely consumer interest. They want sustainability. They want to know where their food is grown and where it comes from. They want to know their family farmer. They want experiential travel. So 2025 is the year of the child, so get out and vote. And also, let's make it the year of agricultural tourism experiences and get out to a farm, because post-pandemic, traveling is shifting. People want to go to the rural communities. They want to have fresh air. They want to see that beautiful landscape that Wisconsin has. So we are encouraging government to support these initiatives and help us make Wisconsin a powerhouse in the agricultural tourism market, because there's a growing popularity in our wine trails, our cheese trails, our culinary foods, as we saw with Top Chef last year. And we really have the key foundational components to make Wisconsin America's agricultural tourism destination. So we are just asking for our state government to help us, because what we need is we need additional revenue, because last year Wisconsin lost 300 farms, and the USDA forecasts another double-digit decline in farm income in 2025. So we want small and rural farms to be able to make ends meet, and we want farms to be profitable, because we want to keep the families on the farm for the fifth, sixth, and seventh generation.
Right. And the key to that, Hans, would be something that you've talked about repeatedly, and that's the need to find new markets. And look, if opening up tourism, if exposing more people to Wisconsin farms helps inspire, you know, some purchases and some market, you know, new market opportunities and things, you can see why, you know, ag tourism is something that farmers are likely to support.
Oh, for sure. I think what Sheila does and what her group does is great. And it's interesting, too, because I think part of the interest in ag is sadly because there are fewer and fewer farmers. I mean, you know, pretty soon I look, you know, as exotic as an animal from, you know, Africa or something. You know, I've had this conversation with Sheila when I first met her. You know, I don't, on our farm, I don't feel like we do anything terribly exotic. It's just sort of mundane. It's what we do every day. But since there's fewer and fewer of us and people are farther and farther removed from production agriculture, it does become something of a novelty for a lot of people that they're interested in. And so it's our job, I think, in production ag to help educate, you know, people, you know, about where their food comes from and be transparent and give them an opportunity to come and see our farms and get involved in some of the agritourism type things that Sheila's working so hard on.
No, that's great. I appreciate that. We're going to talk more with Sheila and Hans in just a moment. First at 7:18, let me pass along a little sports here. We'll take a break and then continue our conversation here with Hans Breitenmoser and Sheila Everhart. The Milwaukee Bucks were missing Giannis last night, Damian Lillard, and Brooke Lopez, and Chris Middleton. You're going to hurt when your team is short all four of those players, and that's what happened in Oklahoma City as the Thunder routed the Bucks 125-96. The Bucks next play tomorrow in Charlotte, and then Friday they are in Atlanta. Both the Badger and Marquette men's basketball teams dropped a bit in the AP rankings. The Badgers are now ranked 21st in the country. Marquette is now ranked 11th. The Badgers will be hosting Indiana tonight, and you can catch that game on several Civic Media stations and through the Civic Media app. Marquette is at St. John's tonight. Let's pause and continue talking ag tourism next. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and you're up north.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Donald Trump is president again, and Democrats need to take a new approach to combat this presidency. Part of that is recognizing the realignment of how we arrived here. In last year's election, one thing Trump did successfully was turn out people who might not otherwise vote. In Wisconsin, he increased his vote share in all 72 counties en route to the largest popular vote total in state history. How did he do this? Well, as I see it, there are two factions of Republicans. One is the more traditional country club Republicans. The other is the newer group, what I'm calling the pro-wrestling Republicans. In my latest column, I wrote about how Donald Trump transformed the party by prioritizing the pro-wrestling Republicans, and why recognizing this new reality is critical to Democrats' ability to grab a steel chair of their own and fight back. Subscribe and read it now at the Recombobulation Area.
Hey folks, this is Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. We have all stopped at a convenience store for a necessity or two. A bottle of water, a half a gallon of milk, or a bag of pickle-flavored potato chips. I mean, those are necessities in your house too, right? But there is a cost for that kind of convenience, as much as 54% more. Now, when I was in my early 20s, like some of you, I may have done most of my shopping at the 7-Eleven around the corner from my apartment. And boy, oh boy, I wish I had known that shopping regularly at convenience stores instead of supermarkets meant I was paying a lot more for my groceries. A National Institute of Health survey recently found that milk can cost 11 to 14% more at those stores, apples and bananas 10 to 53% more, and cereal can cost as much as 54% more. So, for your regular food shopping, keep more money in your wallet and head on over to the supermarket. For more tips on saving, text MONEY to 88285. This is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matinee on Air.
Again, under the category, Where Does the Time Go? Janet Jackson's third studio album, Control, the song was off of it, came out this day in 1986. Coming up in just about 15 minutes, we will be talking to Wisconsin Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley, and then tomorrow at 7:05, State Superintendent candidate Jeff Wright. They are two of the three candidates squaring off in the primary election, which is 2 weeks from today. And then they will, the top two vote getters will advance to the April 1st general election. All right, we're talking with Sheila Everhart from the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association, Hans Breitenmoser, a dairy farmer from up near Merrill there. And Sheila, let's pick up with, as we talk about ag tourism, examples of some of the more popular activities that are helping build support for ag tourism all over the state.
Right. And we talk to farmers. Let's look at our current assets. What do you have? And you know, what do people want? They want farm tours. So they want to go see what Hans does every day. They want farm stays. They want overnight accommodations on a working farm. They want festivals and they want like dairy breakfast because they want to experience that authenticity. And they're looking for hands-on experiences. You know, Wisconsin became a state in 1848, and we have been having farm weddings prior to 1848. And a lot of farms have offered agricultural tourism or farm weddings, what we call agricultural event venues, for over 41 years. And their business model is they rent space on their farm. And the law currently says that if you have a private party, invitation only, you do not need an alcohol license because you are not selling alcohol. So in 2023, the law was changed. It says in January 1st of 2026, those private events on a farm now are becoming a public place. And now you need a permit for alcohol to be consumed on that farm, which is kind of odd because there were like 25 different exemptions, including parking lots that cater to tailgating, other nonprofits and clubs. So we, you know, we were just kind of curious as to why they are targeting a farm after 41 years of operation and other farms that duplicated the model without any type of incident. So we just had a conference last week in Wisconsin Dells, and we asked the Department of Revenue, who is the agency who has the been tasked to write the administrative rules as to what these no sale alcohol permit venue permits would look like. And unfortunately, our farmers got a lot of, I don't know, I'm questioning that. And we really appreciated those staff that came to speak with us, because they didn't do this. What happened was the people who were in office in November, December of 2023, they passed this bill. So in our legislature, how it works is what is called unintended consequences. And the unintended consequences here is that farms will lose 3/4 of their revenue, their monthly revenue, by cutting the amount of weddings from 1 per month or 6 per year. And most farms in the past have had 24 to 30 weddings, because it's seasonal temporary permitting,
right,
which is May through November.
Yeah, these are beautiful places. And in terms of, you know, unintended consequences, Hans, I think we can debate, you know, whether the Tavern League or the Restaurant Association or anything else, you know, liquor distributors and others played a role. It was a many-sided room that was decided to overhaul the state's alcohol rules, and there just isn't representation by, you know, wedding barns and other venues to that degree. But Hans, you know better than anybody, it really comes into the best way to have any kind of influence on what the law is going to be is to get down to Madison or to get out to Washington, D.C., or get to one of these hearings and let your legislators, let your lawmakers hear from real people, not just lobbyists in nice suits.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think those lobby days like Wisconsin Farmers Union does and so forth really do matter, because I think legislators and their staffers, when they see real people and not paid lobbyists, I think that does resonate sometimes. And for an issue like this, it is one of those deals where, come on, you guys, let's use a little common sense here and get this done, because there are these wonderful venues that people want to take advantage of. And by God, we should be able to have a beer.
Without a doubt. And Sheila, you want to weigh in on that as well, of talking to not just your state legislator, but state agencies, local municipal officials. I really liked how you broke down that, you know, sometimes you'll end up talking to staff, and staff aren't the ones that pass the bills. And so you don't have to go all torches and pitchforks on these nice people.
You're right. So Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association has a government relations committee, and the government relations committee has been working on this for 4 to 5 years. And already there's something called a trailer bill, an LRB, that has been created to correct the injustices that are happening here for our agricultural event venues that do not sell alcohol. They do not profit from alcohol. They do not sell alcohol. They do not touch alcohol. The couples buy it through the three-tier chain, through the retailer. They bring it in. It's an open bar. They have licensed bartenders serve it to their guests. It's very safe. And you know what? These are farms. These are people's homes. These are the most important asset that a farmer has. And they're willing to share this beautiful, iconic scenery and their history and their family legacy with others to enjoy. And these have been around since 1848.
And I like how you got the lingo just right in the Capitol, that they are considering a trailer bill. Trailer bill being legislative speak for, oops, we didn't mean to do that part of it. So they've got to come in and mop up the language. But it's a very kind way that we put it under the big dome there. Sheila Everhart from the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. Hans Breitenmoser from up in Lincoln County. Always great, you guys. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Pat. Good to see you, Sheila.
Yep. Thank you. Great day, everybody. When we come back, Dr. Jill Underley, State Superintendent of Public Instruction. This is Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is 93.5 The Tap. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Well, it appears the relatively mild weather we've enjoyed so far in Wisconsin's good for one thing, game birds. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news for a Tuesday. Taylor Finger is the game bird ecologist with Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources. They track population of the birds during the winter months, and she says because of the mild winter, looks like they've got good numbers so far.
So the 2024 crow count survey showed that we had a 20% increase compared to our previous five-year average. So we've had two really mild winters, now going on three mild winters in a row here, and we've had really good brood rearing conditions, which is likely the reason that we saw the increase in the number of birds that we did here on our survey. So again, pheasants, we went into this hunting season with really good conditions, as well as, you know, probably fairly solid population going in.
That's Taylor Finger, game bird specialist with the Wisconsin DNR. He said when it comes to things like pheasant and quail, they really don't have an exact population. They use rooster counts to measure the health of the overall populations.
Loss of appetite, drop in milk production, and dehydration are all key indicators of HPAI, or bird flu. This disease is a threat to cattle health and farmers' bottom line. Help protect your herd and reduce the spread by keeping animals hydrated and eating with BioVet. Bovine Gold Light provides key electrolytes for livestock, and our direct-fed microbial products support digestive health and appetite. Learn more at bile-vet.com.
Innovation, that's BioVet.
When it comes to fungal diseases like soybean white mold and STS, you know how devastating yield loss can be. That's why you work with your seed dealer to find the best genetics for your farm. Did you know you can bring forward the defensive traits of those genetics with a seed treatment? Heads up, a biological plant activator primes your seed to turn on its natural defense against disease. Take your yields to the finish line. Ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment.
And did you know February is National Canned Food Month, and the Midwest Food Processing Association wants you to stop and think about those cans of vegetables that you've got. It takes about 2 to 4 hours from the field to the can for something like sweet corn to be processed. And remember, the nutrition stays consistent within those cans. It's also convenient. And remember, fresh doesn't always mean fresh. If you think what you're getting at the grocery store is better quality-wise than what you're getting in the can, they say think again. That fresh food probably has had to travel quite a distance before it reached that grocery store. And remember, cans are recyclable. Find out more at the Midwest Food Processor Association website. I'm Pam Yonke.
Today's weather forecast is brought to you by SureTight Construction. Raising the roof on quality and craftsmanship. There's no job too big or too small. Find them at SureTight.com.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Some sunshine this morning with clouds thickening throughout the day and a high in the mid-teens. A mostly cloudy sky tonight, staying cold, a low near 8 above. Snow developing for Wednesday. Even some freezing rain mixed at times, highs in the upper 20s. Currently it's 2 below.
SureTight Construction has been raising the roof on quality and craftsmanship. Family owned and operated for over 30 years, they specialize in residential and commercial projects. From siding and seamless gutters to asphalt, metal, and flat membrane roofs. Need a custom shed or garage? They have you covered. Visit SureTight.com today or call 715-720-0212. SureTight Construction, where your dreams become reality.
The Todd Alba Show.
The argument from my former party has been, it's not the guns, it's mental health. Well, no worries, folks. Governor Evers has got you covered. He introduced a plan to put millions of dollars into mental health, particularly for young kids. And the Republicans in the chamber did not clap. If you can't be it for kids, then what the heck can you be for? Jeepers, criminy.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Alba,
Hey, everybody, join us next time as it's Tuesday Tangents with our old friend Luke Mathers. Join us for that and what's worse?
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Be Miley Cyrus with the number one song 1 year ago. Welcome back to Up North News Radio. It is 7:34. I was a little distracted here, and I'm gonna show Greg in the next segment. But in our commercial breaks, you'll note that we have a picture outside my window of Lake Wissota, a very snow covered Lake Wissota. And in our next commercial break, I'll pop up. I'll modify it a bit for the photo that was just sent in by Adam, who listens to us in Malaysia. So if you don't mind a little palm trees, mountains, and oceans, that's what you'll see the next time around we have a commercial break. So we're thinking warm thoughts where we can. All right, let's think ahead to there's an election 2 weeks from now for a state superintendent of public instruction. Top two of the three candidates move on to the April 1st election. And we are honored to be joined by Dr. Jill Underley, the incumbent state superintendent who is running for a second term. Dr. Underley, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much. I was just thinking, we have no snow where I'm at in southwest Wisconsin.
No, and we had none last week, and we finally got about 5 inches yesterday, but this has not been your typical winter at all. No, very much so.
No, it hasn't.
This is the time of year when people have to be thinking about these elections in February and April, and I'm going to want to get to those and your campaign in just a bit. But you know, while we have you here in your capacity of kind of being the chief educational morale booster for all of us in Wisconsin this month, you mentioned that this is Career and Technical Education Month, and a good reminder of some of the long term view that you have to have in education. It's not just the lessons that you learn this week, but you know where these lessons are going to take you. Can you tell me more about the Career and Tech Education Month?
Yeah, so it's really, when you think about the classes that get kids excited about being in school, they're often the career and tech ed classes. And it's not like it was when you and I were in high school, Pat. It's more like when I was in high school, career, or I should say tech ed, was like welding, auto shop, wood shop kind of stuff. But since then, I mean, nationally, we've done so much to raise the standards of what we consider to be career and tech ed. And so it's like culinary, it's art and design, it's engineering, lots of different things, business, health occupations. And so we raise awareness. It's something that we want to invest in because we want our kids to be career or college ready by the time they graduate high school so that they know when they graduate what they want to do with their lives and, you know, not waste any time or money as, you know, it might be. So it's just exciting because when you talk to these kids, they're so engaged in what they're doing in school and it's just really reassuring. I mean, they're going to be all right. And it just feels to me like this is the stuff that we need to continue to invest in because it helps our workforce and our economy and really the happiness and well-being of our citizens.
Well, and it's got to give you a feeling of satisfaction watching these kinds of things unfold in Wisconsin schools. And so that has me transitioning to, you know, what you would contend are your own accomplishments over these past 4 years, accomplishments in spite of some of the political challenges in the Capitol these days. So let me ask it this way, Dr. Underley. There are three candidates, yourself included, for State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Tell us why voters should consider you to be the best one who is suited to win and to serve in this role.
Yeah, well, thanks for that question, because I think that, yeah, there certainly are a lot of challenges. I mean, not just in our capital, but in the national capital, it seems as well. But here I am, you know, I'm the number one advocate for public schools. I mean, that is the number one job of Wisconsin State Superintendent of Public Instruction. And as it would be of the three of us, I'm the only one talking about school funding. The budget that I proposed will address all the needs that our schools have had so that they can go to referendum. This budget is what kids need. When you talk about stability and consistency, I mean, it's really chaotic right now. I mean, we need someone who will stand up for public schools, for all kids, all teachers, and all families, and someone who has been proven to do this. And we're building, or I should say, I'm building off of the stuff that works. And our school districts deserve a lot of credit. Like we were just talking about expanding career and technical education. You know, we can get the funding. We've gotten grants from the federal government in the past 4 years on CTE, teacher recruitment and retention, expanding mental health and access to kids. And then in the state, we passed this bipartisan literacy law so that literacy instruction is science and evidence-based. We've been advocating for fair funding for our schools. But like I said, our schools are the ones that are buying into this. And as a result of their implementation, Wisconsin schools are now sixth in the nation, according to U.S. News and World Report. So that's up from 13th in 2020. And we have the highest graduation rate in our state history and one of the highest graduation rates in the country. So it's no accident that when you expand things that work and get kids excited about school, they're going to come and they're going to learn and then they're going to graduate.
It is arguably the least talked about thing on a daily basis about schools, and that would be standardized tests. And yet that's the closest thing of an apples to apples barometer that folks can have when they're weighing the effectiveness of our schools. But as I'm doing research into this latest topic about standardized test scores, it's clear that going back to No Child Left Behind, or even, you know, further back than that, Wisconsin education has been just on a carousel ride of changing tests and changing standards and changing expectations from Washington, D.C. and Madison. And so now there is talk about the changes that were made last year in Wisconsin standardized tests. We talked about it yesterday with Chris Thiel from Milwaukee Public Schools. Can you tell us what it is that's being talked about, what changes were made in the last year, and why you and others made them the way that you did?
Yeah, so the changes were made very transparently, and it wasn't unlike any other former state superintendent, you know, prior to me had done. You know, it's like we get educators to come in, look at the test, and this is our state test, the forward test, and they make recommendations for new standards to add, old standards to take out, and then they also make recommendations to adjust the scoring scale because you're now scoring different items. And so what it really comes down to is that this past summer we raised standards in math and science, and then we added standards in career and tech ed. And so I wanted the test to mean something. And that's what thousands of educators in Wisconsin who administered the test wanted it to do as well. They wanted it to mean something. So when you're grading kids on it, they didn't want to use a grading scale for a different test, which is what we had been doing previously. And I understand why, you know, because if you say, well, if they have a more challenging grading scale, they're going to rise to that challenge. But you don't also understand then how kids are doing on the test if you're not grading it accurately, if that makes sense. And so it's really a big distraction is kind of how I look at it. The critics or the Republicans in the legislature would rather focus on this, which is really not an issue. And instead not talk about the fact that they've been underfunding our schools for the past 15 years. And if they would invest in schools, in public schools, we would see kids doing a lot better in certain areas and certain segments of our population doing a lot better in school. So that's really, I guess, when it comes down to, if it wasn't a political year, this is my feeling, this wouldn't be an issue.
Can you clarify when you talk about changing standards, does that mean changing like some of the questions in the test? There was a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel article that kind of related it to, you're changing the test so that you're not asking questions about an atlas. You're changing the question to read about a map because, like, no kid picks up an atlas anymore. So we're talking like the content. When you talk about changing standards, it's almost like the questions, the terminology. Is that what's changing?
Yeah, sometimes. And sometimes it's higher, too, like higher more challenging questions. Kids today are learning things that are more challenging than when we were in school. Like, I think any parent who has helped their kids with their homework probably understands what I'm saying here, that third grade math was not like third grade math today is not third grade math when I was in school. And so I think that that's really part of it. Like, we're constantly adding things. Like, history continues on. So we're, you know, adding things, adding context, you know, changing, because the way kids have learned has changed. And so we want to make sure that we're putting in things that are relevant, but then it's not just about the kid here. And bear with me for a second. It's about the instruction, and for teachers to understand what areas of instruction their classes are not doing well in, and or maybe specific kids. And so we can identify, when we have a test like the Ford exam, what areas of literacy or what areas specifically in math, what skills we need to challenge more kids on, or what skills we need to provide more intervention in. So that's really what it comes down to.
Okay. And you've talked about, obviously, with a state with a $4 billion surplus after years of chronic underfunding of education, there are ample resources that could be there. And yet, from the current $50 million that's tied up for literacy programs to the hundreds of millions of dollars that go to voucher schools, let me ask the question this way. It is becoming quite clear in some other states. We talked to our colleague Cam Stevenson in Arizona about a week ago. And other states, people who had for years supported voucher and charter schools have suddenly realized that its explosive growth in their budgets is a real fiscal threat. So my question to you is, if elected to another term, what lessons can you help Wisconsin take from what is happening in other states?
Right. And I think you just really nailed it. I mean, the real issue here isn't about the test scores. It's really about funding. And by blaming kids and blaming our schools, our public schools specifically, you know, the conservatives are making this argument that school vouchers and privatization is better. And that's absolutely not the case. And we've seen that in other states play out, where voters have had an opportunity to vote on statewide referendums if they want it. We never had that opportunity in Wisconsin. We never had a statewide vote on it. And when we see these large referendums, especially in our urban districts, like the most recent one was Madison School District, in November, and then prior to that, Milwaukee. And then we've got a big one coming up in Kenosha and Racine. And when we look at the size of these referendums, it's because our public school budgets have just been decimated by the expansion of school vouchers and privatization. So there are hundreds of millions of dollars are coming out of our urban school districts. And now, this is per year, and now we are seeing it expand statewide to other school districts that traditionally didn't have to manage paying for two systems.
And yet here we are now paying for two systems in the state. So let me ask a final question here then. Again, if reelected, what in your mind is the best path forward with you at the helm of the Department of Public Instruction, DPI, and this current legislature? What would you like to see over the next 2 to 4 years?
Well, I would like to see an investment in our public schools, and I would like to see us stop the expansion of school vouchers. Like, I know right now it's more challenging. I can't get rid of vouchers. The legislature could. But in the meantime, because I don't see that happening, I would like them to at least put a pause on it and to stop it, because we really need to be investing in the system that meets the needs of all kids, accepts all kids, and invests in our local communities. And that's our public schools.
And it is something that's creating, like I said, it's headaches in areas that never thought they'd have to deal with this. And also from elected officials who, again, are seeing that what was once a very tiny pilot program is not so tiny anymore. Dr. Jill Underley is running for a second term as state superintendent of public instruction. She and two other candidates are on the ballot 2 weeks from today. In-person absentee voting is underway at your local clerk's office. Jill Underley, thank you again so much. Always good to chat with you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Pat.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk to Chad Holmes from 98.9 WXCO about what's happening on his show. And for those of you watching on social media, as we go to break here, here's what Adam has sent in from Malaysia to give you some warmer thoughts. Back after this, you're up north.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
If it's a day that ends in Y, VFW Post 305 on Star Avenue has great food and fun events. On Monday, it's the soup flight, while Tuesday is open mic night and homemade chimichangas and tacos. Wednesday brings acoustic music and wings, Thursday sliders and trivia, and Friday karaoke and, of course, a fish fry. Saturday features homemade pizza and live bands in the back hall, and Sunday has food service all day with oldies music. Check out Facebook or VFWPost305.com for more info. It's all happening on Star Avenue at VFW Post 305.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. New Federal Election Commission filings by multi-billionaire and quasi-Trump cabinet member Elon Musk show that he and his companies spent at least $288 million in the 2024 election cycle, even more than expected. We reported last October that Musk poured millions into his America PAC, offering a borderline legal $47 bounty for referring unregistered voters to a website collecting personal contact information. Open Secrets reports that Musk poured $118 million into the PAC just between July and October 2024. Musk coughed up another $20 million to fund the RBG PAC, funding misleading advertising suggesting Justice Ginsburg agreed with Trump on abortion. In October, Musk contributed another $925,000 to a Trump PAC, Trump 47 Campaign Committee Incorporated. Musk filings show that contributions in $10,000 increments flowed to most state GOP committees around the country, many payments coming in late October. Curiously, the most recent filing shows Musk put another $45 million into the America PAC after the election, perhaps to make donations to the Trump Inaugural Fund or begin funding the 2026 midterm cycle. Find links to the FEC and Open Secrets data for even more Musk contributions at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
93.5 The Tap.
Yeah, that was really rubbing it in there from Adam in Malaysia with that photo that he's showing us. We've got on social media, you can see a live video feed of the show, and usually it's a picture of a very frozen Lake Wasoda. And it says on there, send us your morning photos. And we've, over the past 5 years, had some beautiful photos that people have sent in of, you know, sunrises and just pretty Wisconsin scenery. Never one from Malaysia.
Yeah.
So that warmed us up very nicely. We appreciate that, Adam. Although
temperature,
you're kind of warm and rubbing. Tony says it well, Adam. That's just mean to rub it in like that. And Adam writes back on YouTube, "Sorry, I don't think he's really sorry."
It's 80 degrees in Malaysia right now.
Oh man. Tony also writes, I hope Chad Holmes has some opinions about the Wausau mayor and his actions at the city council meeting. Don't often hear Game of Thrones comments here. Well, when I filled in for you the other day, Chad, there was a contentious city council meeting in Wausau about outside legal counsel helping out the Citizen Ethics Board consider the complaint against Mayor Doug Denny for moving that absentee ballot drop box. I guess I've missed some stuff since then. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Oh, good.
But the voice is still working its way back.
Good.
I'm so sorry.
It's not been good. It's been a lousy 2.5 weeks, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Nothing new, because actually the information you had on Thursday was down further in the article that I think you were, I linked to you, talked about the Game of Thrones aspect of it. But it's really amazing to me that the mayor, and I was glad you, and I actually talked about this yesterday, because I couldn't talk late last week, so I couldn't talk about it. The idea of these folks, again, this pattern that we see from the right. Go back to the Tea Party. Go back to January 6th. Go back to last week in Wausau. These people going out there and screaming at elected officials and trying to intimidate. I'm getting tired of that.
The mayor of Wausau
needs to stand above that.
I couldn't agree more.
The mayor of Wausau needs to get, and he actually did not start the meeting the way he was supposed to start the meeting. Mm-hmm. He is supposed to start the meeting by talking about the rules of conduct. He didn't do that. He started defending himself. And then later he was told, hey, we got some rules here. And then, okay, then he set the rules. Then he told his people to stop screaming at people. It's wrong. And I'm getting really annoyed with it.
Yeah, and you know who's captured it well is our friend Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and political editor for Civic Media. His new column is called Donald Trump and the Rise of the Pro-Wrestling Republicans. Yeah, I mean, it's a really good article, and I'm not just saying that because I helped edit it. But I'm saying he once again has captured the part of it that is it's circus-like. And look, I know we've turned sports into show business. We're turning politics into show business. If we're going to do political theater at our hometown city council meetings, I mean, we really are in the, you know, the Roman Empire's bread and circuses phases of American democracy.
This is not new.
Yeah.
You remember the Tea Party?
Yep, I do.
These were school board meetings and other local meetings where these lunatics would come and start screaming. That's the way they do it. And
here's the thing. The anger that some folks bring into this, because again, they learn this from right-wing TV and radio. If somebody, and I'm happy to do it for some folks, but if I could magically transport them to nearly any other place on the globe and show them how lucky they are to live where they live and to have the things that they have and the privilege that they have, there are people around the world who would do anything to get half the life they have, and the last thing they'd do is show up at a city council or a school board meeting and scream at their elected officials about things. These are such nothing burgers compared to the real problems that people have to deal with where democracy is not flourishing. This is only hampering, you know, the health of democracy when you act like this.
No, it's exactly right. The battle of ideas. Isn't that what it's supposed to be about?
Right.
Not intimidation.
No.
And unfortunately, intimidation is becoming a major factor in public policy discussion.
Yeah. You posted this on social media, so I'd go ahead and mention that you, this cough of yours, this sore throat thing, have they given you do you have a diagnosis for this thing yet?
Because I went in on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Said basically not a lot. My work doesn't help.
Yeah.
They gave me some steroids. He said, well, 50-50 will help you. But since you work in radio, it will give it to you and see if it helps.
You can pay on your way out. All right. Does that mean you only have to pay 50%? I feel like you should only have to pay 50% if you get a 50-50 diagnosis.
No, it actually, thanks to President Obama, I didn't have to really pay. I had to pay the tax on the pills.
Yeah. Gee, you're saying the Affordable Care Act is making our health care affordable?
And that's, by the way, I've been thinking about this as well. I mean, I've never seen it as bad around here. Last Thursday, I was supposed to do a game. I wasn't going to do it, but then found out that one of the teams couldn't play because they had too many kids sick.
Yeah,
last night, did a game. Five of the girls were out because they were sick. And then you got Donald Trump saying that we don't want any information about health.
Oh, no, there's hardly a hospital bed to find in some places. The amount of respiratory ailments is so bad. People got to take care. They got to get up to date on their vaccines and everything else. Chad, rest up for a few minutes before the show starts, and we'll catch your show coming up on WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Take care, buddy.
You bet.
Greg Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air, his first post-vacation edition.
Woo, can't wait, baby.
Thank you to today's guests, Dr. Jill Enderle, Sherita Booker, Christina Lurie, Dan Hagen, tomorrow State Superintendent candidate Jeff Wright at 7:05, Congressman Mark Pocan at 7:30. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow morning here up north.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Join me this week as we talk to my friend and national figure Adam Kinzinger in what will be certain to be an incredible conversation.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Open that conversation with this person that you disagree with so much by trying to find the shared value, the thing that you both actually agree about. Challenge yourself to keep bringing it back to the value that we agree on and maybe even the outcome that we wish to see. Go have the tough conversation, because you know what gets better with practice? Those tough conversations.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap,
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Mexico and Canada made concessions to earn a pause, but China isn't budging as new U.S. taxes kick in. CBS's Naomi Ruckham.
This morning, China announced tariffs against some U.S. energy and machinery exports in response to the president's 10% tariffs on Chinese goods.
Canada and Mexico both agreed to tighten border security to stop the flow of migrants and illegal drugs. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is in El Salvador, where he says the nation's president has made what he calls an extraordinary offer.
He has offered to house in his jails dangerous American criminals in custody in our country, including those of U.S. citizenship and legal residence.
Back-to-back atmospheric rivers are hitting the West Coast. CBS meteorologist Tony Sidiku.
Flood watch is posted for much of California. The heaviest of the rain is now shifting further south, so basically from Redding to San Francisco, San Jose to Monterey.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.